Hi, and welcome back to another segment of Our Community Unsheltered with Brookings Core Response Executive Director, Diana Cooper. How are you doing this week, Diana?
Doing good. Just hanging with the kids this weekend, so that, not bad.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, it's funny weather out there, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's foggy and then it clears up and it's hot. And then it's foggy and it clears up and it's hot. It's like,
right.
We
played video games this morning, then we went out and did some yard work and cut the grass, and now we're back inside with the video games. So,
yes.
It's just,
and I'm looking at my yard and I can see things moving, which means that the wind is coming up. And like, wow, right? And of course, inland and in Portland and places like that,
they're
at like 110, 112. I mean, wow.
I'm so glad I don't live in the valley anymore. And, you know, my sister lives over there and she is like, oh, it's going to be so nice. It's going to be like 100 degrees. I'm going upriver. And I'm like, God, why?
100 degrees. Yeah, that doesn't sound fun at all.
There are some people that just really enjoy the heat, and I'm so confused. But they're probably equally as confused as why I like to sit in the fog. So,
yes,
you know, it's
exactly.
It's fine.
Exactly. So, last week, Father Bernie from St. Timothy's Episcopal Church joined us for our discussion. So it seems to me as though St. Tim's is being targeted by city staff for not being a traditional church because they're ministering to the poor, the hungry, and the unsheltered, which totally confuses me because I thought that's what traditional churches do. That's not what traditional churches do.
Well, yeah, I mean, they all have some sort of mission, you know, and and I did meet with many of them last year. And so there was a few that I didn't even know what their, you know, sort of side projects and programs looked like, but now I kind of do. And so, and I also did want to sort of touch on that because I've seen a lot of, you know, there was some in the newspaper, there was some comments, you know, from the public and I forget what they're called. The opinion section.
Yeah, right.
Letters to the editor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I saw some of those. I've been seeing some posts and just in general, a lot of conversation around other churches in the area. And I saw someone comment on the pilot Facebook post and stated that there are other churches doing things. And so I do want to clarify that there actually are, not specifically for people who are homeless, but for other groups in the community, so children, seniors, things like that. So while, yes, you know, St. Timothy's is the only church that's really dedicated to providing services to people who don't have housing, there are other churches doing various, you know, community works, and that's part of their mission, you know, as a church.
Right, because it's about taking care of those who are less fortunate. That is what a traditional church is supposed to do. I mean, that's...
And you know, educating the believers and the next generation of believers. And so, you know, again, so there's some that are doing childcare programs and things like that for, you know, mostly just people kind of who are a part of the church and everything. So I think that's where St. Timothy's differs, is we're providing a lot of services for people who are not necessarily believers. Some are, some not,
well,
you know.
And in fact, the city council wants St. Tim's to go in front of the planning commission to apply for a conditional use permit, which, from what I can see, would greatly restrict their ability to serve their population. Now, I notice there's a planning commission meeting coming up, and that's not on their agenda, so... Any ideas about, you know, what's going on or where we're at with that?
Yeah, I didn't even notice the upcoming planning meeting. I haven't checked this weekend, but
it's really soon. I think it's next week. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Bernie does not expect it to be on the planning commission or the planning committee agenda at this moment. And it's really up in the air, it feels like, for some of us. You know, Bernie probably knows a little bit more than the rest of us, having direct communication with the city. But as far as we know, it's going to planning committee, but I think Bernie, you know, again, has other information and is hoping that mm-hmm. that won't be where it ends up. So yeah. it just sort of feels like a wait and see, you know,
which is kind of funny,
not always the best
right?
feeling.
No, especially when you've got a crowd of people that shows up with a petition saying, you know, you got to do something. And it sounds like city council is going to do something. And then it's like, pause. Yeah.
You know, there must kinda be, weird. I'm assuming there must be conversation going on with city staff, right, you know, in the right. city itself, with between the city staff. So right, I guess right. we'll hear more when we hear it. I don't even know.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, the latest. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I also noticed that there seems to be a lot of posts on Facebook, like within the last week or so, about yeah. the critical shortage of housing in Curry County. I've seen Henry Johnson, the manager of Fred Meyer, asking for rental referrals, which...
Yeah, three of them. He was looking for
right,
three different...
Right? Like, that surprised know. Me. It, now, he's clearly looking... He's clearly looking for people, you know, his workforce, right? I mean, unless yeah, he himself yeah. doesn't have a place to live, which is really
weird. Gosh, I hope
not. I know, right? Jeez. But I also noticed that the new manager at Burger King was looking for a place for himself to live when he moves to Brookings. And, right. You know, not
I think he's already
far.
Here. I think oh, he's and, already here and like, staying in a motel
in his
or
car?
Something. No, I think he's right? in a motel.
Oh,
I could be
him.
Wrong, though, but I thought yeah, that was the case. So I think he's already here and, like, trying to hire people and then also looking for housing and... I mean, wow. that should say a lot right there for him. But, what's Burger King going to do about that? They're not going to build housing
right,
for people.
Right. And there seems to be quite a few other requests or, you know, putting feelers out trying to find something. But most of the answers are the same. We have no rentals. We have no affordable housing. We right. have a housing crisis.
Right. That's old news.
I know, it's like, duh, we have known this for at least a decade.
Yeah.
And I just don't see any of our electeds who should be trying to find a solution. I don't see the solution. I don't see the plan. Is there yeah. any plan anywhere?
Well, I think they should probably drop the mental health piece at the moment and pick up housing because, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, like cleaning a house with kids is like, what do they say? It's like cleaning your kitchen while somebody's like spilling ketchup on it. Or there's like a much better term for
right,
it, but it's like,
right.
you know, or it's like brushing your teeth with ketchup or something. And basically, it just means like you're moving and you're working, but you're actually not getting anything done.
Right.
And I think with mental health, as far as the city, I think with mental health there, them focusing on mental health is going to kind of, you know, it's going to kind of feel like that. Because while I certainly am not saying we don't need more mental health, you know, if you have someone who doesn't have housing or who's doubled up, and again, when I talk about people without housing, you know, I think everybody goes to just the worst of the worst, and that's generally, that's actually usually not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people
right.
working or who have an income and whatnot.
Right.
So, you know, them dealing with their mental health issues, it's kind of like dealing with your mental health issue while living in a situation that causes mental health issues.
Exactly.
So it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of, I won't say a wasted time, but it would do us pretty good for the city to focus on housing instead. Just,
well, particularly yeah. when you look at how many people are without housing at this point, and the fact that we know that's going to increase when that moratorium on rents ends, which they extended it until July, I think the end of July.
I saw that.
Right, which is great, but they made a statement with that extension that said, basically, we're not doing this again. This is the
yeah,
last.
This is
extension.
The last. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I, you know, I get it that everybody wants to kind of get back to normal, and but we're so far from being ready to get back to normal. I mean, you know, the economy is still just completely messed up, and you know, it, so people have not paid rent for several months, maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they've been saving that money so that they can now pay it all back, right?
And
they've been trying to live.
Yeah. And getting rental assistance right now is a process. It's not if the eviction moratorium is a month away, which, you know, thankfully now there is a little bit of an extension, but if that eviction moratorium is a month away, getting rental assistance could be 2 months away. So you're not going to get it in time for that eviction moratorium to run out. And I think that that's, there are some people that are going to get caught in that little bit of space between, probably more than we suspect. There is a lot of rental assistance coming down and a lot of landlord assistance, you know, in general. But like I said, you know, when it's a 2 month wait and you only have a month, I mean, you know.
Yep. It's not a good thing.
No.
So I know that, you know, I saw some people who stood up at the last council meeting during the public comments, and they were talking about ADUs, which are, I never can remember what that stands for.
Accessory dwelling units.
Ah,
so like a mother-in-law sort of guest house.
Yes. But there could be lots of opportunities for that here, and could be a relatively quick and inexpensive way to at least begin to deal with affordable housing.
I think as far as costs to the city itself, this plan, putting the, you know, the city of Brookings got $1.3 million from the American Rescue Plan funding. I know the county got like $4.3 million. And then our senator and representative, so Senator Hurd got $4 million, which I do understand. Right now, I have not heard that any of that's coming to Curry County. And then I have also not heard anything so far on David Brock Smith, who I think got $2 million. Other than Bandon, I still have not heard if there's anything else coming maybe to Curry. So, but the county got its 4.3, the city got 1.3, and I think that's where the request was that that 1.3 be put toward system development fees, because Brookings out of the county does have the highest system development fees. And, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25,000, depending. I don't know the numbers myself, but that those are numbers that I've heard. So putting that 1.3 million, you know, maybe even almost all of it, I don't know what else the city's looking to use it on, but it would provide the most immediate and the cheapest housing relief that the city could ask for, aside from other sources of outside funding, like, I mean, Project Turnkey would have provided, you know, several million dollars just for our area alone. So this would be a great way to expand those dollars and maybe even match it with county funding. Maybe the county would put in, you know, $500,000 for the city of Brookings towards system development fees. They were talking about putting some money towards harbor sanitation fees and things like that. To help. So it's certainly not a far cry to think that they could put some money towards Brookings as well. But yeah, that would be the quickest, cheapest way to get housing right now and probably be very successful.
Well, and it would help everybody, right? Because, I mean, you know, you've got the people who would end up having a roof over their heads. What a wonderful thing. But it would also help all of the builders here. I mean, I get it
that they're
already busy, but, you know, there have got to be some builders who are not absolutely stretched, right? And
if they aren't
here, then maybe there's some in Crescent City. I mean, it's providing jobs. It's providing work, right? And those dollars will stay in the community because that's what happens.
Yeah,
it just seems like a win-win for like everybody.
It is. And I think that there, you know, while I personally don't know a lot of builders right now, because most of the people that I knew in that arena were kind of more from my dad's side. And so now I don't know as many now, but I know that there are some in the area and then, you know, many in the Medford, Ashland area who would come over here and provide that service as well. But we have a lot of handymen here and a lot of certified handymen. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. not, you know, some of those shelter or some of those little ADUs are fairly easy to put up, and you can get some that are sort of prefab and mm-hmm. Not that expensive at all and mm-hmm. put them up. So, yeah, I think it's totally doable. I mean, it's really a really good option for people who own their own land to provide a little bit of extra income, but mm-hmm. also provide housing for someone, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I don't actually know of any downside to it. You know, and I was trying to yeah. think before we got on here, well, what's the downside to ADUs? Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything.
I don't think that there are really, I mean, people have done it in the past. There are many people, especially in Harbor, there's a few people I know who have built ADUs on their property and rent them out to, mm-hmm. you know, various people who are working, but also one woman specifically rents them out to people who, you know, kind of come from the street and don't have housing. Mm-hmm. And just very cool. But, you know, I haven't heard anything negative, honestly. So I think it's just the same as all other housing. You know, it's not really going to have a fiscal impact on the city itself.
It's not going to cost the city. It's not going to cost them anything. But it could have a positive financial impact in that yes. there's work, right? So yes. you've got those salaries and everything, you know, go back into the uh-huh. community. You've got people who weren't in housing before who now have a roof over their head, which means they actually can be comfortable in a community and spend their money. You know,
yeah.
what money they've got, they can spend it. And there are quite a few homeless people from talking with you who actually have money.
Yeah.
It's just they need to get connected with affordable housing, some yeah. place to live.
And it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't even have to be like, quote unquote, like a low income housing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just anything that is more affordable than what we're seeing right now, which is a lot of, you know, there was a studio for, I think, $1,100 or $1,200. There was
unbelievable. Wow.
There was a three bedroom for $2,500. And it's really sad because now I look at them and I'm like, I guess that's not that bad. But it is.
It is.
I have a four bedroom for $1,500. And when we moved here from Medford, we had a three bedroom for $950, I think, mm-hmm. with two fenced yards, large place, you know, probably mm-hmm. close to 2,000 square foot. So we moved over here. This is about the same size. It's technically a three bedroom, but it has like a large room in the end. So we use that for mm-hmm. another bedroom. Mm-hmm. And it was $1,500. And I just thought, my God, that is so expensive. And now I'm so grateful just to be here.
I know.
And seeing people, you know, be evicted so they can fix it up and turn around and double or sometimes triple the price. And yeah. I do understand people needing to make money, but that's not how we should be making our money, is on the backs mm-hmm. of people who are, you know, probably working and making close to a minimum wage.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there were quite a few threads where people were saying, you know, at $11 an hour, I can't afford to live in Brookings. There is no place yeah. that I can afford to rent and pay for food and utilities. I mean, at $11 an hour, I can't make it. And it's like, wow, okay. So we have two choices. You either up that minimum wage so that they are making enough, or you lower the housing costs.
I mean, I think that we're going to have to get the housing costs lowered. Because even if you raise minimum wage, which should be done anyway, that's, I mean, it's absurd mm-hmm. that we still have a federal minimum wage that it was, you know, what, 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was telling Matt, well, you know, Matt, obviously Matt and I have been together for a long time, but we were talking about it. And my first job that I got, which was at Wild River, I think I made like $6.45 an hour. And I remember when I started working at Subway, I made close to $7. Then I got a raise to $7.50. And when I started working at the Snug, minimum wage was still about $7.50. And I was making $8. And I thought that was insane because I was making more than minimum wage. And to me, it felt like a lot more, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So, but it's not changed since then. While the state minimum wage has went up, and that's great, mm-hmm. you know, the federal minimum wage still being set at, what is it, $7.50 or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $7.50.
Yep.
So, you know, servers and other people like that are probably making pretty low wages right now, especially during a time when we're not, everything's not back to normal and tips
exactly.
are not.
Exactly. Exactly.
Probably what they were. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And you see little comments that say, you know, definitely go to the restaurant, but expect a long wait because they don't have all of their servers, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. Because you know what a long wait translates to is not a good tip. I mean,
no.
That's just,
or people walking out, honestly.
Exactly.
Without, you know, and, exactly. and not ordering.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just concerning to me that, and it's not just with affordable housing, it seems to be with everything. But certainly affordable housing is the thing that's in our faces right now. Our elected officials have known for at least a decade, that we have a crisis in mm-hmm. affordable housing. And they've done nothing. They've not done anything.
It's almost like 10 years ago, you know, when we completely understood how short we were on housing, you could have said, like, imagine if we have a pandemic, this is going to be so awful. And so here we are, you know, 10 years later. And of course, it's not like a pandemic could come at a good time, but we were so ripe. I imagine how many places were just so ripe for just catastrophe in the housing area.
Yep.
Because they already were. And then a pandemic hit. So
to say nothing of the fires, to say nothing of the fires,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was a perfect storm. It was.
Yeah, we're coming up on a year.
And it continues to be a perfect storm because the fires are starting again.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So
there was a fire on the Greenway last week as well. I saw mm-hmm. that. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who live over there. When the fire struck last September, so my friend Eugene, he passed away on the 7th, and then I stayed that night with his wife and I went home the next day and I thought, okay, I'm going to take a few days off and rest. And that very day on the 8th is when the fires started. And my friend reached out to me. She was running a Facebook group for the people of Ashland and just people in the valley. And there, you know, there's probably more than 10,000 people on there. I don't know exactly how many. And reached out to me because they were having all kinds of power shortages and all of these things. And so she couldn't keep people updated. So I sat on the scanner for like 2 days, you know, with very little sleep, just trying to update people as they came in, where the fires were, where the exits were, where people were supposed to go, which direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was total chaos over there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so
and they've I said that mm-hmm. was that was a real problem, that the real problem was lack of communication.
It was. And to be honest, me over here, I'm not in the middle of it, although it really felt like I was.
I bet.
But me over here trying to get information too, and I probably had some of the best links to it because I didn't have any outages in my power mm-hmm. or anything like that. And I was still struggling to find, mm-hmm. you know, which direction do I tell people to go when they reach out? So it was very scary in real time. And this year, so when I saw that there was some smoke on the Greenway last week and there was a fire that they had to put out, you know, every time there's any talk of fire or smoke, I know many of my friends over there, there's so many people over there that are suffering from some PTSD from last year. And
Oh, yeah.
It's just super triggering every time we hear of smoke or there's a possible fire on the greenway or wherever the case may be. So
absolutely.
Everybody's still very much on edge and probably will be for a long time.
And you would just think that, okay, you have a decade, right? You have a decade that you could have done something. You could have done something. And it's, maybe I'm naive, but I think that we elect people to positions in government so that they will come up with these plans, so that they will use a little bit of foresight and look down the road and say, we've got a study here that says, you know, we don't have enough affordable housing and, you know, this isn't going to get better on its own. So, what can we do to fix this? And I just don't see it happening.
I wonder, you know, with the pandemic, we saw a lot of change in political will very quickly. I mean, almost overnight, especially with the school system, with mental health, with medical. You know, we just saw so many changes in how services are delivered and things that we were told before, we can't do that. And then we wake up the next day and they're like, actually, that's the only way we're going to do it now.
Exactly.
And so it was very frustrating because all of this time we could have had some such better telehealth and online education systems already in place. But, you know, there was various reasons why that wasn't going to happen. So anyway,
and just the cost, just the cost of the vaccine, right? That the vaccinations aren't costing any of us anything.
No, yeah.
And yet, that's not something that we could possibly do, give away free medical, right? That means that we're like a communist country or something.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yes, we've done a total 180.
Yes,
so we have. In knowing that, and actually I think for a lot of people, this was the first time those of us on the bottom who've been calling out for certain changes were like, hey, you could have done this a while ago. And it's almost insulting. You know, I'm relieved that we have it, but it's almost insulting because this is something that some of these things could have saved lives before. So, you know, that being said, in the sense of housing, it almost makes you wonder, like, you know, we've had these 10 years and now we're in the pandemic. What will it take to change that political will? If not that, then what? And how can we get there? You know, I don't know if it means that it's just different people that we need in there, or if it's that we need to somehow work with the ones that are in there and get them to understand it, or maybe they do and they're just not communicating it. So whatever that break is there, you know, we have to find a way to come together.
Yeah, I look at the city council and I don't see anybody up there who is thinking.
Working on housing?
Yeah, or even thinking about how to deal with the crisis. You know, it's the number of times that I've heard anybody talk about it, it's been, we can't do anything about that. We're just up here to run the city. We can't do anything about, you know, affordable housing. It's like, okay, affordable housing actually is infrastructure. I mean, and we're seeing what it looks like when you don't have it. So now we know for sure it is.
If the city council can impose its will on a shelter project, it can impose its will on a housing project. There's no, I mean, they've stepped over that line that they drew in the sand. So
yep.
I don't take that as fact.
No.
That's not reality.
No.
And it's absolutely within their scope of, you know, it is.
Absolutely. And it would seem to me that anything that is about the welfare of the city is in their scope. So if it's in their scope to hire more cops, then...
Or work on mental health.
Exactly. Then it should be within their scope to figure out a plan for affordable housing. It's not rocket science.
You know, they didn't previously look at mental health. This was a little more recent, and they kind mm-hmm. of shifted and decided, you know what? We got the hospital here. We could mm-hmm. get something for mental health here. Well, mm-hmm. that's kind of what they're doing is responding to a need from the community that they're seeing, mm-hmm. a need that demands a role they've not stepped into before.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's the case, which it is, mm-hmm. then the need and the role that they've not stepped into before is for housing. And so, yeah, I mean, again, just sort of reiterating, I guess, the whole thing, if they can step into spaces that they haven't before, then they can step into spaces they haven't before. I mean, it's really simple. No,
it is. It's completely that simple. And you just need to do it.
Yeah, people. Just do it.
I mean, just do it. That's all. I mean,
because it's affecting everyone from all walk of life. I imagine that there are some, well, I know there are some more affected than others, but it's traveling upstream now. So, you know, we have the manager of Fred Meyer. We have the manager at Burger King. We have various other, the superintendent for the Gold Beach School District, for crying out loud, doesn't have housing.
I mean, how crazy is this, right? I mean, that's just, it's crazy. And at the same time, what I'm seeing is like two or three properties at each planning commission meeting that are being asked to turn from a long-term rental into a short-term rental.
I see those two.
Two or three at every single planning commission meeting. So what's happening is that people who have rentals that could be rented out to community members are deciding that they want more money for their rentals, and they are getting a variance and turning it into short-term rentals. I get it. They're going to make a lot more money. I get it. But at some point, should not the city council say, wait a minute, if all of the rentals in town turn into short-term rentals, there's no housing for our people. Mm-hmm. I mean, shouldn't there be a ceiling?
Because it's roughly 50% of the housing in Brookings, maybe it's Curry County, but no, it's Brookings. Roughly 50% of the housing in Brookings is rental, and 50% is owner occupied. And so,
wow,
that's a really large gap. Most places that are doing well have more of a 75% owner occupied. Mm-hmm. Owner occupied,
right?
So, and obviously, there's we have low income rentals and things like that here too, but most of that is just individual housing. And so, yeah, we have a lot that are rentals, and many of those this year we've seen a lot of increases on them. We've seen some turn to short-term rental, and I've also watched the planning committee and watched a lot of the short-term rentals. In fact, the one that came up a few weeks back, I had stayed in before. My cousin lived there for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And so it's just everyone that I see is kind of heartbreaking, because I know what that means.
Exactly.
I know that means that we're making room for visitors, and we don't have any room for our residents. And so I don't know
I know, because if the residents are working in any of the service industries,
right,
they are the ones who are waiting on and serving the visitors. So,
exactly.
Right. So you're making room for the visitors to come to town, but we have nobody
no one to serve the visitors.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's,
that's why we have motels, is for visitors to be able to come stay. And I
know.
I'm not a landowner, I know you are. I'm not a landowner, and so there's things that I just don't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of those things, you know. And I have friends who have short-term rentals that, you know, converted them into short-term rentals. And I feel the same way, that it takes from our stock and we already don't have a lot. But, you know, they're private landowners and they can technically do what they want with their property. And so it's not up to us, but I think
the city, isn't it? Isn't it up to the city? Can't the city say, this is the ceiling, you know?
Sure, sure. They do that in all other places. You know, they've done that in Hawaii. They've decided, you know, these are our rules. And I don't know what all of them are, but these are our rules for short-term rentals. And they have a cap and, you know, they have requirements on the people that own them. And the point there is that they don't want people to fly in, look at this beautiful place, buy a house so they can come 1 month out of the year and rent it out for guests coming from the mainland the rest of the year. Because then they all get bought up and then the native Hawaiians have no place to live and effectively get moved off of their own island. So.
Yes.
It's
and that is happening to people who were born and raised here. They effectively have nowhere to live, and they're being forced to leave their hometown because there's nowhere to live.
Yeah, I have a friend who moved away not too long ago, you know, within the last 6 months, because she just couldn't double up anymore and didn't want to stay. And we've doubled up before, especially if you have kids. That's, you know, it's, I was going to cuss, but it's just not a happy place.
No, no. So it's hard enough with kids, right? No.
Yeah. You can't do it.
And I feel like the electeds are waiting for somebody else to do something. Like what? Who are you waiting for to?
Oh yeah, no. Nobody else is gonna. No. Yeah. If they don't, it's not gonna happen. And
yeah, it's like you don't actually think that there's gonna be this mythical developer who's going to come in here and say, you know, I've got millions and trillions of dollars and I want nothing better than to, you know, put affordable housing in Brooklyn. That's
might if they saw things moving here, they might say, this is a place that, you know, look at the city is giving these incentives or working to expand it. And so, yeah, why wouldn't they come in if that was the case? But not if, you know, not if the city's kind of sitting around on it. And I wonder if the city council or the city itself, I wonder if they know. You know, we do have a fairly new council. And, you know, aside from Ron, we have a fairly new council. And I wonder if they know that this is part of their responsibility. I wonder. I really do.
Well, I think they actually are able to define what their responsibility is. So I think they have defined what their responsibility is. And I think if they don't want the responsibility, then they fail to define it as being one of theirs.
Yeah, I don't know how to change that other than having, you know, pressure. Other people in there or who are looking to move that agenda forward because it just blows my mind.
So are there any new bills in Congress or, you know, the state legislature? Is there anything up and coming that we should know about?
There is, through the American Rescue Plan, there is funding in there for HUD, although I don't remember what the amount is. And I think that a lot of that is going toward sort of upkeep on current HUD rentals and things like that. But I think it'll also go to expand some of the wait lists. But I mean, really, what good is a HUD voucher? It's not going to do you any good if you can't find a place.
The physical place does not exist, right? Then having a voucher does nothing. Yeah.
And if you're on the wait list for 3 to 4 years and you get a voucher, it's good for 4 months. If you don't find anything, your voucher expires and you go back to the end of the line. So, expanding the HUD funding Unless they're using that to build some affordable housing, I don't see that as our, it, you know, it's certainly not our saving grace.
No.
But there is funding coming down in, like, again, like all the funding that's come down. If we don't grab it, we don't get it. So, yes, expand affordable housing, expand housing in general, put in the ADUs. There will be more money coming down as long as you're doing the work. And this is what I've learned just in the last year that I've been running our, you know, our section of the organization and just sort of walking alongside with Bernie, is that when you put the energy there and you're doing the work, the money comes later. You know, the money, it comes there. It comes to you. And if it doesn't, maybe you're, you know, putting your energy in the wrong place. But that's been my experience this whole time, is we're doing the work, and then people come along or organizations come along and they, you know, will provide for that because you're already doing it. And nobody wants to sit around and talk about it anymore. So, you know, we've had our studies, we've had our meetings and committees, and we know that we have a housing crisis. We know that there's funding out there. So there's really no need, there's really no reason to stop and wait for, you know, to see what else is coming. Just move.
Yeah, do something. I mean, you know, no, they're absolutely. And I keep saying that to people in various areas of my life, that, you know, it's just money. It really is just money, you know. And I know we've got this thing about, ooh, you know, money. Is the money there? Well, it is. It's there. Now, it's not sitting right in front of you on a on a nice china plate.
It's going to take some work. Sure.
You're going to actually have to work a little bit and make some connections and build some relationships and, you know, do some digging to find it. But it's there. It's there. And waiting for somebody else to come up with the plan, it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's not working. It's not working on the county level. And it's not working on the city level because nobody's coming up with the plan.
I wonder, I mean, it doesn't really help the city of Brookings, but I wonder, you know, attacking this on a county level, how that would look. And I know that there is a lot of resistance to expand in Harbor. And there are a lot of things specifically, I think, to do with the sewer over there, you know, their water system over there is preventing expansion. And so the county had some sort of thoughts rolling around about how they could help provide funding to sort of just increase the incentive for expanding in Harbor.
Because there is so much land.
There is so much land. Yeah. I wish we could incorporate Harbor and be able to just expand the way we need to as a city, because we're so blocked right now and it doesn't seem to be working in our benefit. But, you know, that's a whole other conversation, I suppose. Harbor coming into Brookings.
Well, and
one that,
you know,
many people have.
Exactly. And, you know, I get the whole tax issue. You know, people don't want their taxes raised. And a lot of people in Harbor specifically are on extremely limited incomes and and cannot afford their taxes to go up.
Almost sort of gentrified in a way, because we'd be able to use the space out there and probably build a lot newer housing and whatnot. But there, you know, to be honest, there are issues in Harbor because of that very situation, because it's not managed by the city and it's managed by the county. And, you know, it's the county does not, I think we heard at the last meeting that the county and the city sort of share, you know, building inspectors and things like that. And so what I do know is that there are a lot of people living in Harbor who are living in housing that is not just subpar, it's absolutely falling apart, and they are on fixed incomes. I actually just found this out a couple weeks ago. Actually, maybe a week ago. I can't quite remember. I found out that we thought, so there's SSI, which is Social Security income. So if you're, you know, disabled, you don't make a lot of money, you don't have work history, things like that, you get SSI. And the max is like, it's close to 800. It's like 791. And so we
thought.
A month, $7.91 a month.
Right. And less than $800 yeah. a month to live on.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's SSDI, which is Social Security Disability Income. So if mm-hmm. you do have work credits and you become disabled, or if you're disabled from birth, they use your parents' income credits. And so it's various amounts that you can get. It's typically mm-hmm. more than you would get on SSI, but could be less. Mm-hmm. And then, then there's just Social Security retirement and so various different benefits there. But SSI in particular is one that we look at because it's what a lot of people who are on fixed incomes have because mm-hmm. they became disabled before they had work credits or whatever the mm-hmm. case. So $7.91, Michelle and I, and all of us, we thought that $7.91 was the minimum, that was what people got was $7.91 if you got SSI. And so what we found out is that that's actually the maximum, and that if they count your rent, against your expenses. Mm-hmm. So if you live in a place that's like $400 a month, which is like nobody probably, but mm-hmm. if you live in a place that's $400 or $500 a month, they count it against your expenses and you get the max amount, the $7.91. But if you own your own home, doesn't matter what shape the home's in, you have to pay space rent, that space rent does not count as an expense because you're only paying for land. It doesn't matter that there's a house on the land. What HUD looks at is that you're paying for a piece of land and they're not. Oh. Yeah, and not HUD, I'm sorry. What I meant was Social Security.
Right.
So what they're saying is, well, we're not gonna, that's not shelter, it's just a piece of land. And so there's no connection to those two Mm-mm. things that need Mm-mm. to be very much Mm-mm. connected. So we have people, just finding this out made me, it just sort of like, my heart kind of sank because I was thinking, mm-hmm. of all the people who are living on Court Street and Sunshine Cove and Grootendorst and in all of these various trailer parks where they have these single wides, double wides that are falling apart. Mm-hmm. One particular person that I'm working with, the half of the trailer is absolutely unusable completely. It has, there's, the floor, the walls, everything. It might as well not even be there. The other half is, for all intents and purposes, it's fine. And this person's actually fixed it up very nice. It's very cute. And so you wouldn't tell just by walking into the front part of it. But mm-hmm. the floor is sinking and it's soft and squishy. So that's an issue. The roof is no good. That's going to fall apart. So this person is getting like $500 a month. And we could not figure out. I thought, I got brought in and I was like, well, for sure. Well, let's figure out why they're not getting the max. Mm-hmm. And let's get it for him. So after working with Social Security, that's what we found out, was that this person will never get more than that $500 a month because they own that trailer. It's nothing more than a, dignified cardboard box, really. And the space rent that they have to pay, they pay $420 in space rent, $150 in electric a month because there's no heat that stays in. Mm-hmm. And so they're already in the red before they, that's just with those two bills. So this person opted to not pay their rent. Mm-hmm. They just stopped paying their rent, and the church stepped in. St. Timothy's paid like $7,500 of back rent. Wow. So this person doesn't get evicted, but we have to find a plan moving forward. And knowing that now, and just thinking of all the people in Court Street and Sunshine Cove and Grootendorst and those areas, and how many of them are living in these little trailers that are falling apart, black mold, mm-hmm. who knows, total mm-hmm. safety hazards for our seniors, mm-hmm. who make like $500 a month and are never going to get more than that. And I mean, so we have a scab here in Curry County that is just festering. And I don't know what's going to tip us over the edge, but we're all dreading that day. So it's more than the crisis we're seeing with our own eyes. There's some that is just under the surface here that we're going to have to, it's going to come to a head and we're going to have to face that at some point. And so better now than later.
Yeah, because we actually are in a great position thanks mm-hmm. to the pandemic. Where things have been reprioritized, And there is money that is coming into the area that is supposed to be used for stuff like this.
I think that the county, it would be very wise of the county to put together a grant program for people who own their trailers to be able to apply for some types of, you know, fixing it up, fixing the roof, mm-hmm. fixing the floor, even mm-hmm. just the most basic of, you know, fixes. So I think that the county should really look in that direction. And I don't know if they will. I think that there is a group right now. There's a committee being formed to talk about how they're going to spend that $4.3 million. I actually just found out about that. So I'm going to apply to be on there. I don't know if it's already full. So mm-hmm. we'll see. But they need to understand what's happening in their areas that they govern. So,
and I think that there's a group of people that were getting together that was being headed up by LaRose Felicity, because she evidently has got some construction skills and decorating yeah. skills that are like awesome, right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Well, she showed pictures on Facebook of what she moved into and then what she fixed it up into. And it was serious work that she did.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get people together who know how to do that kind of work so that they could do that, you know, go into places that
yeah.
are falling apart and need considerable amount of work. But
it would be,
obviously, they need some grant money, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It would be very fruitful for the city, the cities, and the county to fund projects like that to go in and renovate, because, you know, it's not hard to connect those dots for us. And I wish that we were doing a better job of connecting it for the powers that be, because it seems like maybe we're not. And there's still a lot of resistance. So even when we are, it's not getting through the way we want it to. But I think even just this one woman's example, and you can imagine that this is probably happening all over the county and the cities.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But just with this one particular person's example, you know, that her, it affects her medical. It affects the resources on our community in general, because obviously she's going to need energy assistance and rental assistance and things like that. And then this house is just, it's just falling apart. And so it's never going to, you know, if she moves out, I imagine she'll probably stay there till she passes. And so, you know, she passes away, there's, you can't do anything with this place. Mm-hmm. You just have to tear it down. So, or, you know, they may end up renting it out again. I have no idea. I wouldn't.
Word. Oh my
I mean,
word.
You know, they're not the first owner, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you think, you know, not only is it a health hazard, but think about what that means for her in terms of her mental health,
mm.
right? I mean, the city council wants to deal with mental health. Let's deal with some of the things that are exacerbating that problem.
Yes.
You know? Give yes, somebody a home that they can live in that does not give them black lung, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also can contribute to other mental health disorders, including hoarding. And I think it's hard to understand if you haven't sort of been around that arena for a while. But, mm-hmm. You know, things like not having enough, and then even if you have a decent amount of income, but not having enough to fix things like that or to take care of yourself. And we do see a lot of this where people are hoarding, they're not throwing trash away. There's all kinds of issues on the inside that you can't necessarily see from the outside. Mm-hmm. And so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely does affect people's mental health when they are living in a place that is falling apart and damp and, you know, you're not going to have friends and family over and things like that. And
No.
Yeah.
So I guess the good news for me is that I am seeing more and more light getting shined on the problems. you know, you and I are talking about it, and I'm seeing it showing up on Facebook more and more.
Yeah.
And the attitude seems to be shifting, right? Now that we've got kind of not just the derelicts, you know.
Right.
We've got
right.
just regular, ordinary people who don't have housing, and we're watching our neighbors get evicted, or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I think our, it's coming
our employees,
home.
Our family. Yes. Yeah. It really is. I mean, I've had people comment on some of my things that are traditionally sort of opposed to some of my ideas and opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of comments, you know, there are the latecomers. There's still some people coming late to the party that are not getting, you know, they're just sort of like, you know, all people without housing are using drugs. And we're like, no, we've already covered that.
Exactly.
Let's move on. We're on the next chapter
now. Go back
to
the other conversation like 3 weeks ago. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, get caught up, get to where we're at, and then we'll have a decent conversation.
Exactly.
But it's almost like spinning your wheels sometimes. So, but there are a lot of people that are just really opening their eyes to it. And, you know, even some of my own family
and that's hopeful.
And friends,
that's hopeful to me, right? Because if it's being talked about, then it is starting to generate critical mass.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's where we have to get to. We have to get to critical mass.
Isn't it frustrating that we have to get there, though?
I know. And I don't know what it's going to take. Right? How many more people have to die?
Right.
I'm just wondering. Right?
That's my concern is
why
are we waiting till the last minute? And also, like, how much longer are you going to wait?
Yes.
Because if you're listening to the experts, which, you know, in some areas I consider myself an expert.
Yeah.
And, but there's more than just me, you know? So
I know.
If we're saying that this is happening, it's because it's happening. It's not because we're bleeding hearts.
The canary is dead, people.
I know.
Okay? The mine canary is dead, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so Diana, it looks like we're just about out of time again. I can't believe how fast this goes.
Yeah, what happened? I
don't know. Maybe Tom is actually speeding things up. But it was a great conversation again. And I am I'm hopeful that the conversation is not just happening between you and me, but is spreading out and happening in a lot of different places. So,
you know, really quick before we go, a couple people now, which is a lot in our little town, a couple people have now come up, and one, a really good friend of mine, and said, are you on the radio? And I said, yeah, I'm on the radio a lot.
I love
it. And so there's a lot more people listening than I, you know, I just think maybe it's just us listening. Who knows? But
Nope. They're increasing. I know. And I want to thank our listeners for listening. Our affordable housing crisis is impacting hundreds of lives in our community. Our local workforce can't find a place to live. Our long-term rentals are being turned into money-making short-term rentals with no plan by the city for how many is too many. People who were born and raised here can't afford to live here anymore. It takes reaching critical mass before change happens. Are we there yet? How much worse does the situation need to get before our electeds finally come up with a plan? This is Candace Michelle for Our Community. See you next time.